This is the son of PCJ. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Well, hello everyone. It's really nice to have you with us once again. On this week's show, we're going off to Dallas, Texas in the United States to find out about the upcoming HFCC, or High Frequency Coordination Conference, where broadcasters from around the world gather to discuss the new frequency season for B11. This weekend marks the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 terror attacks on the World Trade Center in the United States. 10 years ago, I was working as an announcer-producer for China Radio International. I'll be joined by one of my former colleagues to talk about the time and the groundbreaking show we produced on the attacks. Also later on, Dan Hensley will join us for a look at the propagation forecast, so stay tuned. Media Network Plus, the show with data that will control your mind. First, here's Paulette with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
Global satellite operator SES and Russian fixed satellite service operator Gazprom Space System have entered into a strategic partnership to provide additional satellite capacity to serve the Russian market. Under the terms of a multi-year agreement, SES has relocated its Astra 1F satellite, previously located at 51 degrees east, to the orbital location 55 degrees east. GSS will utilize 16 Ku-band FSS transponders on the Astra 1F satellite to provide communication services for Western Russia ahead of the arrival of GSS Yamal 402 satellite in 2012. In return, SES will use capacity on GSS Yamal 402 once it becomes operational at 55 degrees east. Yamal 402 is currently under construction and scheduled for launch in November 2012. The use of Astra 1F at 55 degrees east is part of a strategic partnership between SES and Gazprom to explore opportunities for the provision of satellite capacity for Russia. GSS will use the capacity on Astra 1F and later Yamal 402 together with Russian satellite service providers to deliver a wide spectrum of services, including the transmission of TV bouquets for direct-to-home satellite TV operators, the distribution of TV signals to cable and terrestrial networks and broadcasting stations, the delivery of broadband access for corporate clients and the consumer market, and point-to-point communication, as well as cellular backhauls and satellite news gathering services. Botswana invited the United States to send troops to guard a transmission station used by the Voice of America Studio 7 to broadcast into Zimbabwe, leaked diplomatic cables show. Botswana's Defense, Justice and Security Minister Ramadiluka Seretse is said to have made the extraordinary request in July 2008 over concerns that Zimbabwe would try to take out the controversial transmitters operated by the International Broadcasting Bureau. LM Radio, Mozambique's English-language music radio station, which launched in October 2010, can now be heard in Lesotho and the Free State Province. LM Radio has signed a long-term agreement with the Lesotho National Broadcasting Service to rent airtime on the 1197 kHz medium-wave transmitter located near Maseru. LM Radio's programs will be carried on the 1197 AM transmitter during the hours 0700 to 1700 or 0500 to 1500 UTC 7 days a week. The signal reaches up to 200 kilometers from Maseru during daylight hours. The official launch date is October 1, 2011. Test transmissions are currently being broadcast. Top public broadcasters from all over the world will meet in Singapore for the Public Broadcasters International 2011 conference from October 26 to 29. The conference will see delegates discussing issues of funding, strategies to navigate the digital age, the impact of new media, the digital switchover, and the role of public broadcasters in handling natural disasters. Hosted by MediaCorp, Singapore's leading media company, this year's meeting will also mark the conference's 20th anniversary. PBI was set up in 1990 as an assembly of broadcasters to collectively share experiences, solutions, and best practices in the wake of the challenges faced by the industry. We strongly believe the conference will provide an excellent opportunity for all to gain insight into our future together as public broadcasters, said Chang Longyang, Deputy CEO of Media Corps. Special thanks to Andy Sennett at the Media Network blog at Radio Netherlands Worldwide for the material used here. You can read more at their website, http://blogs.rnw.nl/Media Network, or visit www.pcjmedia.com and you'll find the link there.
Ten years ago, I was working for the English Language Service of China Radio International. Something I would not have imagined back then is that I would be reporting on one of the major news stories of the century. That's the 9/11 terror attacks that took place in the United States when two commercial jetliners flew into the World Trade Center in New York. Most people remember exactly where they were when this happened, just as they did with other major events such as Pearl Harbor, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, or the shuttle disaster. For myself, when I think back, it seems a little surreal. I had just returned home from CRI at 7 o'clock in the evening on the 11th, had dinner, and had fallen asleep in front of the TV. Then, at 13 hours UTC, 9 p.m. Beijing time, I awoke to the BBC reporting that an airplane had crashed into the North Tower of the World Trade Center.
As we come on air, we have serious news of a major possible air crash in the United States. A plane appears to have crashed into one of New York's tallest buildings, the World Trade Center. As you can see, those are pictures of smoke pouring out of a gaping hole in the upper floors of the World Trade Center.
It was not until a few moments later that I realized, like many others around the world, that this was not just a freak accident. Just after the second plane slammed into the second tower, I called Jocelyn Ford, an American I was working with at CRI. That week, I'd been hosting CRI's morning news magazine, Real Time Beijing. At midnight, I headed into CRI to start working on the show that I found out later was groundbreaking on CRI. And that was a news magazine with breaking news, something that was unheard of at China Radio International. This week I contacted Jocelyn in Beijing, where we discussed the live program and what we did, which was the first Chinese outlet in China to break the story. In fact, no other Chinese media, including the rest of CRI, reported on it. Now, if you'd been in China and you were listening to the domestic service of China Radio International at midnight UTC, this is what you would have heard.
Good morning, everyone. It's September the 12th. The year is 2001. Today we present special coverage of the terrorist attack that took place in New York City and Washington last night, which began around 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Two hijacked commercial jets slammed into the 110-story World Trade Center in Manhattan just before 9 p.m. last night, Beijing time, and the two buildings collapsed about 1 hour later. Another hijacked plane struck the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. All the government buildings around the Pentagon were evacuated, and many government buildings in the U.S. today, including the post office and libraries, are closed. A fourth jetliner, also apparently hijacked, crashed in Pennsylvania. Over the next hour, we'll bring you special reports.
Well, we certainly told the news as we thought fit, which wasn't always what was done at China Radio International in those days. I do remember when I first started the job, it was January that year, that I went into the director's office and I said, look, there are things I can do and things I can't do, but I am a news person, and something may come up during this year that I will treat as news, maybe you wish I didn't, and that'll happen. And September 11th was that day.
Now let's talk about that day for a moment, Jocelyn, because both of us have some very unique stories of what happened that day. What was the thing that you remember the most before we went on air?
I remember you being exhausted and me being worried whether we'd be able to carry off the show because you'd been all night and keeping it up to date. But really more than anything, it was actually what happened when we left the newsroom that struck me most. Because, you know, if you're a news person, it's in your blood. You need to know what's going on that show. Then you need to update for the next show. And I remember leaving the newsroom and saying, okay, how are you going to lead the next show? How do you move the story ahead? And everyone just stared at me, and I couldn't believe it. And I said, well, where is your news director? Who's doing the assigning? What are you on? And they said, oh, he's at a meeting. Oh, he's at a meeting about the terrorist attack, right? Oh, no, nothing to do with that. And I was just flabbergasted that nobody said anything. In fact, one reporter said, oh, you only care because you're American. And that's when I realized what Chinese media was all about, that everybody had been totally into government think. They couldn't think on their own. My immediate reaction at that point was, no, it's not. The U.S. will have to react, and when the U.S. reacts, that will change global politics. And indeed, from my perspective and from sitting here in Beijing for the past 10 years, this is what gave China a window of opportunity to go ahead, develop without the U.S. on its back because the U.S. was on somebody else's back.
Well, you know, that morning, Jocelyn, before we went on air, there was a young producer who was giving us some help. And he had shown up and I had said to him, you know, we should be covering this for the full show. He disagreed with that because he said, this happened in the United States. It doesn't reflect on the people of China or China. That shocked me.
Exactly. It was that sentiment. It was the we are sort of on a little island, completely out in the universe someplace, divorced from the rest of the world on Earth. That was the feeling in the newsroom among our Chinese colleagues. And, you know, I remember thinking there could be consequences for doing live news. To be frank, at that time, I believe I was not aware that on breaking stories like this, they were supposed to wait for the, you know, whether it was President Jiang Zemin or whoever was up the chain to say, okay, it's ready, it's okay to cover it. I didn't realize that you had to get that level of permission. Of course, I knew there were sensitive stories, but I didn't know how far it went. So we were potentially putting people's jobs at risk by doing
what
we
did. But,
you
know, Jocelyn, when I look back at that day, the thing that sticks out in my mind, because live news on China Radio International is extremely rare. Now, listeners who listen overseas may not know this, except for one transmission of CRI News and Reports, which was done at 7 a.m. Beijing time. Every other news program that went out on CRI was recorded usually 30 minutes or 1 hour before broadcast. So when we went on the air to report on what happened in New York City, it was groundbreaking.
Well, right. I mean, when I was invited to work at China Radio International, I was invited to help develop the show China Radio, which I named Real Time Beijing. It's sort of tongue in cheek because at that time a lot of news was not terribly real and certainly not timely. I'm not sure anyone else got the joke, but I sort of enjoyed that. So it seemed like a trendy name at the time. But the premise of that show was that this was going to be the first live show since 1989 when one of the announcers had chosen sides and stuck with the students and called on governments around the world to side with the students. And after that, there were not to be any live broadcasts until 2001. Now, what I found remarkable was not only did they start live broadcasts, but they had the first foreigner, myself, co-hosting it and co-producing it and having a voice on that. So very China-esque. They leapt into a new stage, not baby steps saying, oh, well, first we'll try with our own announcers, but they actually had a foreign news person who said she does news and not propaganda come in and let me do live news.
After the program went to air, there's something that when I think back now, I giggle about it. I didn't find it so funny at the time, but after we did the show, we went to the director's office. We were, I like to say to people, we were summoned to the director's office for a meeting with the director of the English Language Service and the then news director. What was your recollection of that meeting? Because I remember sitting there saying to myself in my head, something's wrong here. Something's wrong with what's going on here.
Well, I'm not sure I remember it terribly clearly. What I do remember is that all of our bosses were on vacation or away, and the top boss was teaching English at that time to ministers or something of that nature. But I remember a bunch of orders: no interviews with experts, no internet news. Basically, they're trying to say you can't say what's going on. And I recall actually going out to do. They said we couldn't use tape, in other words, recorded interviews from the people we spoke with on the street about their reaction to the terrorist attack. And I remember some people were celebratory. A number of Chinese on the streets thought this was a great thing. And when we came back, I had to decide, okay, am I going to self-censor, which is against my principles? And I recall you had been doing internet searches globally, and you were reading some of the comments off the internet, and I likewise, instead of playing the tape, which I'd been forbidden to do, said what people told me, which to me was conveying the information better than doing nothing and something that I could live with. So I remember a bunch of rules and trying to get around them. But I don't remember that much about that meeting. So you
well,
tell what me
I
what you remember.
What I remember very well is we were sitting there and the news director, who was also a presenter at the time, he was, I sort of had the feeling like we were called to the principal's office and they were scolding us for doing it. And I remember thinking, wait a second, China just got the 2008 Games. We did something which for China Radio International was groundbreaking. It was different. And I should also mention, we had no budget. I remember the night that I was trying to get some sound bites and some interviews with people overseas, I had to literally almost like fight the news director for the phone card to make overseas phone calls. So we had no budget. And it's almost like they couldn't see it.
You know, actually, I'd like to think that we were sort of part of that whole change because they knew that in order to get credit, and I remember bringing this up in our defense, saying, well, look at what we're doing is bringing you credibility, which you will need to host the Olympics successfully. You will need a freer media. And we're being part of that. I recall making that argument. But I don't remember so many specifics from that meeting, but the subsequent meeting when we were called in essentially for a self-criticism.
Yes, I remember that. And I remember how
clearly
it began. I don't know if you remember this part, but I remember the director of the English Language Service, she praised us at how good the show was. And then all of a sudden, they disliked everything.
I remember that we were told there was
yes,
a complaint.
The famous complaint.
And I asked. The famous complaint. Always. The anonymous complaint. I asked who was it from because I heard some people had very positive things to say. And we couldn't get to the bottom of this, which suggests it was somebody with political clout. And I recall, I think a lot of the sensitivity was because I was trying to humanize reporting. I remember I got in touch with a New York correspondent and said, well, what happened to the Chinese nationals? Are they all accounted for? Are they all safe? Can you tell us about their lives? And I remember him saying, well, the consulate won't tell us. And you know, I said, well, try harder because this is our constituency. We are a Beijing-based program. There are people here who may have relatives in New York, and they may be listening to the show, and we need to serve them. And he said, does it matter? At which point, I just almost fell off my rocker. Well, we didn't have rocking chairs. But anyway, it all came home to me. Yes, this is the voice. These people, the other reporters had been trained to be the voice of government. And I was trying to speak from the perspective of our listeners. And they had never done that. And that was the whole issue, the whole problem with the media at that point. And I must say, 10 years later, we've come a long way, baby. The media very much sits in the readers or the excuse me, the listeners' shoes in this day and age. And that a lot has changed. But at that point, none of the reporters could understand why I was trying to do anything except for the official line.
Apparently, reports are coming in that some U.S. embassies around the world have closed and some have been given permission to close.
It is up to each individual embassy. We do not yet know about Beijing. However, the U.S. embassy in Tokyo has said it will not be open for business today. Embassies elsewhere in the world are also closing down, especially in the Middle East. Also, there are reports about what will happen next in U.S. airport security. Airport security will certainly be scrutinized. There will be a lot of soul searching. Some experts are saying the terrorists targeted domestic flights because security there is less strict. Luggage does not necessarily need to be screened. There are no armed guards as there are on international flights. There are some new stricter security regulations that were to take place in November. In July, federal regulators decided on how to strengthen security measures. Also, I think in the United States, we do expect wider discussion on security and security consciousness. A Phoenix TV out of Hong Kong, they had a commentator who suggested that U.S. concerns with the...
You know what's interesting about this whole thing that happened? Because we did two shows like that. And in the back of my head, I was thinking, you know, I don't think they're going to ever want to do this kind of news program or news style magazine again. But not too long after the United States attacked and invaded Afghanistan, they did a special 3-hour live program on the invasion. And I found it kind of ironic and kind of funny, actually, that they didn't ask you or I to participate in it.
Right. I remember at that self-criticism meeting, sort of like back in the Cultural Revolution, where I felt I was being asked to criticize myself, I said, look it, I do news, and if you're not comfortable with what I'm doing, take me off the show and replace me. And I seriously thought they might, and I wasn't sure I was really ready to do that, but I really, you know, if they were not happy with me treating this as a news story and as a human being, then, you know, maybe then they should take over. And I remember I thought at the time the one person who was going to replace me may have considered it a split second, but then, and I was told this later by other reporters, they had considered this first live, you know, real-time Beijing news show a huge breakthrough, and they didn't want to lose that ground. And I had other reporters coming up and saying, listen, Jocelyn, don't go too far or else, you know, they'll move us back to before 2001, before where we started. And wouldn't that be worse than what the show has accomplished to date? And, you know, that's the tricky thing about being in China. You want things to move in a certain direction. They're not going to move the way you want them to. But if you don't compromise, you sometimes get something worse. And this is really the dilemma for even living in China today.
Jocelyn Ford, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And by the way, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. The High Frequency Coordination Conference is a non-governmental, non-profit association and is a sector of the International Telecommunications Union in Switzerland. Twice a year, broadcasters from around the world gather to discuss the summer and winter schedules, or A and B season schedules, to coordinate frequencies on the shortwave bands. This year marks the first time the conference is being held in the United States. Joining us now is Jeff White for more details.
One of the themes, the main themes at this coming HFCC in Dallas, is in fact about alternative methods of program delivery, as they call it, delivery platforms other than shortwave, which would include things like, of course, internet streaming and podcasts and satellites and local AM and FM rebroadcasts and so on. I think the HFCC is looking to sort of branch out a bit, perhaps, beyond just shortwave. But, you know, perhaps that's only natural considering that, you know, most of the members, most of the stations that do broadcast on shortwave also have internet these days and podcasts and satellite and so on and so forth. So they're trying to expand the scope of the organization a bit. But, of course, the main body of work that gets done at these things is the actual coordination of the HF frequencies, and I think that'll probably continue for quite some time. I mean, we, you know, as you know, there have been a number of stations cut back even within the last 6 months and certainly within the last year, and I was kind of wondering, you know, how many people might show up at the HFCC in Dallas. Because normally there's about, 100 to 110, maybe 120 people that come to these conferences. And so far, we've got about 100 people registered to come to Dallas. So there's still obviously interest in coordination.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeff White. We now move to Dan Hensley for a look at propagation over the next few days. Dan?
For September 10th, we have a 10.7 centimeter flux predicted of 90, an A index of 5, and a KP index of 2. September 11th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 92, an A index of 8, and a KP index of 3. September 12th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 95, an A index of 12, and a KP index of 3. September 13th, we have a 10.7 centimeter flux of 100, A index of 8, KP index of 3. On September 14th, we have a 10.7 centimeter flux of 100, an A index of 5, and a KP index of 2. On September 15th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 100, an A index of 5, and a KP index of 2. On September 16th, we have a 10.7 centimeter flux of 103, an A index of 5, and a KP index of 2.
All right, thank you very much, Dan Hensley of Shortwave America. You can find out his blog by going to www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, which, of course, is also our website. If you wish to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, our email address is very simple, mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Next week, Paulette McQuarrie will be in the presenter's chair, and we're going to be presenting a two-part documentary over the next 2 weeks, produced and presented by Jonathan Marks, looking at the history of radio during World War II. So on behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Perron saying so long, take care, and best 73s to you all.